right now, though. Bruce is here at Sports Lit 101, welcoming an old friend of mine back in and a new friend of yours.
Yeah, it's great to have Ed here. We have Ed Rice here with us, who, among his other accomplishments, is the author of Baseball's First Indian, the story of Penobscot legend Louis Sock Alexis, a book which I read a number of years ago in hard copy and was really impressed with at the time. And I thought, well, geez, maybe I'll get to meet this guy someday. And now we have, because Down East Books has reissued this in a slightly expanded version.
Thank you, Bruce. That's very sweet of you to say. And I never expected to come around this time a second time. It was really, really something. It's quite fortuitous. And it's an unusual story in that it had nothing to do with that book. It had everything to do with the thought in my mind that Robin Emery, the great female runner who's been running the roads of Maine for more than 50 years, deserved a book. So I went ahead and did it, and I told Robin that we'd probably have to self-publish this puppy. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Down East Books said, sure, we'll do this book. And then the next thing out of Michael Steer's mouth after we're done agreeing to that is, what about that Sock Alexis book you did? And I looked at him, and I said, it's been out of print for a number of years. And he said, what would you think about bringing it back as a paperback? And that's how it happened.
Well, it's one of the things that the first time I read it, I thought to myself, how often do we need an author to set the story straight? You know, we've all heard stories growing up, and we've heard this and that, and I was not unaware of who Sock Alexis was because I had relatives that go back in Maine a long, long time. But I believed all the myths that had been told about him, and when I read the book, I thought to myself, where the hell is Major League Baseball? Why haven't they righted this wrong?
Yeah.
And you've had some luck recently, not what you want. But.
Wow. Well, you're almost bringing me to tears here because I'm not used to having accolades said. It is a remarkable thing about this story. I shouldn't have been able to come along and have this book to write. And another fortuitous opportunity was my journalism career bringing me back to Bangor, Maine. I hate to tell you this, Rich, but I wasn't planning ever on coming back to Bangor, Maine. This boy had been to Boston for a few years. And so anyway, it just was a really an unusual opportunity because even in college, I talked about this book. I need to have a book, but I have no idea what that book is. I come back to Bangor, Maine in the early 1980s. And I happened to be looking at the Bangor Public Library on the file I have on Sock Alexis because my dad had taken me over to the gravesite when I was a small boy. And as a journalist, as a writer, and as somebody familiar with the journalism of the 1890s, Hearst,
yeah,
Pulitzer, who was just off the charts as bad as Hearst, there's two articles and they were in conflict with one another, and now I'm ready to rock and roll. Do I have any idea that's going to take me more than a quarter of a century to research this? Thank God I didn't. But I did say, this is a fascinating story. It should never have fallen to me, but I did the best I could. And thank you for the kind
words. Well, you did a wonderful job. And then you've taken that work to a new level with your efforts to get first the Cleveland Indians to give him the proper respect he should have, Major League Baseball itself, and the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I'm the guy who's your... You know, Don Quixote and Sancho Panza have got nothing on me for tilting at windmills,
you bring
right?
Ed a windmill and he's going after it.
I've taken them all on, it seems like. So you take on Sports Illustrated for two disgusting articles, and I think that's only fair to say because they're riddled with inaccuracies and myths. And the staff at Sports Illustrated still doesn't even want to acknowledge that maybe there's a mistake here and they should correct these. The Baseball Hall of Fame honors the pioneer players for Afro-Americans, for Hispanic and Latinos. Minnie Minoso is a Cuban, women in baseball, and they don't want to have anything to do with the Native Americans. And the issue is simple. And I hate to use the phrase half-breed, but that's the issues that we are talking about right. With the Society of American Baseball Researchers. Anyone who's got a trace of Indian blood suddenly qualifies and supplants Sock Alexis as the first. And I, of course, have had to go after and try to debunk that. So there are any number of windmills for Ed Rice to tilt at here.
Well, also, I think, Ed, one of the great things that this book does is it puts Sokolexis in perspective of the greatest athletes ever to come from the state of Maine. Because you have so, I mean, yes, Ian Crocker has won medals. Bodie Miller was from New Hampshire, but he's one of the greatest skiers of all time. He went to school in Maine. We have, you know, other people in all the sports, Billy Swift, you know, all these guys. But when you go down and you look at the people who were as good as he was when he played, the list is pretty small.
Yes. Amen to what you just said. Because as I was reading this, I couldn't help thinking, and I hope that Rich will consider this, because when we talk about a five-tool baseball player, some people get added to that list, and maybe they don't really belong. And I'm thinking about somebody like Roberto Clemente, who was a great baseball player in every facet of the game, except look up his stolen bases. He wasn't a man who stole a base on demand. When you look at Sokolexis's five skills, when he's on first base, he's going. And in that era, the players who played against him were in awe of him. And that happened at every level that he played at. And so the thing that I learned from my first go-around with this book and having a second chance to try to correct some things that even I didn't appreciate as a wonderful opportunity is this. It didn't matter that he didn't have a long major league career, because in the 19th century, if we're looking at it in the proper perspective that we should be, this man was an extraordinary college baseball player when college baseball was more popular than professional baseball. And even more to the point, here in Maine, town ball and summer baseball were off the charts, and players from all over the Northeast came and played up here. And at those two levels, Sokolexis was, the people who played against him probably wanted to get his autograph. I mean, they'd just not seen a talent like this.
What was the biggest surprising bit of information you learned about him?
Wow. The thing that was remarkable to me is that too often he's referred to in the pages of the newspapers as a savage.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, and I know you've heard me tell the anecdote, one of the presses in Maine didn't even want the book unless we could edit out and do for political correctness the phraseology that they had in the 19th century newspapers of the late 1890s. And the thing that stunned me is he spoke three languages and that he loved music and sang frequently at occasions. And where, you know, you have this sense of a man leaving. And I hope that people will just think in terms of in the 19th century for an American Indian to be off his reserve or her reserve, that's a dangerous proposition. And yet Sok walks so comfortably, seemingly walks so comfortably, speaking three different languages and having a musical talent. So
Ed Rice is here with us in studio. And Ed, one of the other quests that you went on puts Maine really at the forefront in the nation with the elimination of Native American nicknames for high school programs in the state. You were one of the leaders in that fight, and it's something I think as a state we can be very proud of now.
Oh, absolutely. I'm working right now with Ben Collings. He's the representative who worked with Molly and Dana and Barry Dana, Donna Loring, all the officials throughout. Of course, I'm a white person, so it's inappropriate for me to be speaking at any of those schools. I wrote the columns that I did, but I'm working with Ben Collings, and one of the things that we'd like to do ultimately is have a recognition that Maine is the first. They worked on a bill that said schools shouldn't do this any further. Well, that's almost looking past what we did achieve, which is that we don't have any schools doing it now, and we were the first in the country to do that. And what I'd like to see is recognition of close 34 schools that in the state from, you know, 2000 on pretty much made the change. So it's remarkable, but they get the credit, really.
And what I find astonishing is I remember when Mullian was a student at BAPS and I was there overhearing her explain to this whole issue as a teenager.
Yep.
And so many people think this comes down from the top, but this comes from the bottom. I mean, this comes from a whole group of people in our country being objectified in a way we would never allow other ethnic groups to be. I mean, I couldn't imagine if somebody, you know, said, oh, well, we're going to name our kids the Drunken Frenchmen. I'd be nuts. I'd be crazy. I'd be going, you know, the Fighting Irish, even in ways I find offensive. How did Emaine have the energy to do this?
Well, a lot of it had to do, frankly, with Lewis Sokolexis and the amount of time that I got talking about the one thing to focus attention on the most insidious mascot in use in the country today, and it continues to be used, and that would be, of course, Chief Wahoo. Yeah. So you've got this racist caricature Indian, and I think we've all seen on the internet and in a variety of different places what it would look like if you took that same caricature and put a yarmulke on it and said Jews, or you had an Afro-American same thing, or you had a Latino-Hispanic person. And, of course, you get to a point of you'd never do that, and then here's Chief Wahoo.
Yeah.
So starting with that point, and then, of course, there is no more eloquent spokesperson than Barry Dana, going into the schools, presenting different programs, cultural programs, but then expanding it to, can we look at this? And so a number of schools were on board with this. That's the key point.
Ed, we would be remiss on this day if we didn't get you to share your thoughts on somebody else celebrating a birthday today. The great Bill Russell turns 86. I know, one of your favorites of all time.
Absolutely. You know, I can get teary-eyed just thinking about those great Boston Celtics teams I grew up with as a boy in the 50s and the 60s. And Bill Russell is just somebody having the statues in the greater Boston area that they finally did, and looking at the multiple facets. I know a number of people go there and they're a little confused by the multiple statues. Well, there are multiple facets to his personality, and I remain as much in awe of that man as any American athlete. So thank you for asking about that.
Ed, great to see you again. Thanks so much for coming in.
Rich, thank you. It's always a pleasure. And I can't believe the thing that's really funny to me is Doris Kearns Goodwin is coming tomorrow, and you had Ed Rice on today. You had Bob Ryan on before, and I was the warm-up act.
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah.
And now, wow.
There you go. You never know who's going to show up here on our program. Baseball's First Indian from Ed Rice, back in print. And next week, Bruce, do we have a guest next
week?
We
have Timothy Spears talking about his family's long legacy with football. He's a professor over at Middlebury.
That's Spirals.
Spirals. And then the next week we have the Day the Crowd Didn't Roar with Kevin Cowherd about the only game ever played in Major League Baseball with no fans. So we got people coming.
Excellent. All right. Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday on Downtown.